Coming up on Tech News Today, iPhone loses its top spot, Google loses a little market share, and Waze makes it rain money. A lot more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, November 8th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at Gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachary.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world and put them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Ladies and gentlemen, the reign of the iPhone is over for at least one quarter. Strategy Analytics released their market share, smartphone market share report for Q3 2012, and the Samsung Galaxy S3 grabbed 10.7% of the world market compared to the iPhone 4S's 9.7%. Now, Apple fans can comfortably claim that the iPhone 5 only came out for the last 9 days of the quarter, and they should be back on top in Q4. Meanwhile, Android fans can point out that the iPhone fell from 5th to 6th place in China and shout, "We're number one," and wave their foam fingers.
Made in China.
Probably. Speaking of rains ending, only 89.33% of internet searches in the UK were conducted on Google sites last month. That's according to Experian Hitwise. Hey, wait a second. That seems like a lot. Why the long face? Well, it's the first time in the last 5 years that the Google search market share in the UK has ever dipped below 90%. Microsoft's Bing chipped away at the total with 4.71% of all searches, which was a high in 2012 for the company, probably related to Windows 8 adoption. Yahoo sites and Ask sites, along with other search engines, grew share as well.
The reign for bad news for RIM is also over. Yeah,
yay,
really. RIM announced that its upcoming BlackBerry 10 OS has received U.S. government certification already. This is the first time RIM's gotten approval before a launch, and that also means that government agencies can issue and use BlackBerry 10 devices when they finally launch.
Unofficially, I'd guess Digitimes has about a 50% accuracy rate. So here goes. Digitimes reports Foxconn, which has plants in China and Brazil, plans to move into more developing nations by opening a plant in Detroit. Also L.A., but that didn't fit in the joke. Unless it were in the Inland Empire, maybe. Then it might. Anyway, the report is attributed to, quote, market watchers, which are right up there with train spotters and birders in reliability.
Winos of the world, our time has come. Amazon has launched Amazon Wine today, a marketplace for more than 1,000 wines from around the U.S. Customers order directly from a winery, via Amazon, of course, and are able to ship up to 6 bottles for $9.99. No free shipping for you primers, though. People who subscribe to Amazon Prime. That's what I call a primer. Each winery also operates under its own permits and determines which states it can ship to. The participating states, at least for now, are limited. Both the purchaser and recipient of wine must be at least 21 years old, and all shipments require an adult signature at delivery. Purchases can't be sent to P.O. boxes or Amazon lockers.
That's a good start. The Square train keeps on rolling. Square's mobile payment solution is now accepted at about 7,000 Starbucks locations. The partnership, that I cleverly called Squarebucks, was announced back in August. But be warned, Starbucks fans, if you use the Square app to pay, you're not going to get Starbucks rewards. You've got to use the Starbucks app for that.
You also have to buy Starbucks coffee. You can't buy, like, Pete's or Blue Bottle.
Right. I don't think that's going to work.
Facebook has expanded into feature phone-heavy markets like Africa by partnering with carriers to provide their service for free as an enticement for people to spend on other parts of the carrier's service. And Google's not shy about ripping that idea off. They've launched Free Zone in the Philippines. The new service will allow customers of Globe Telecom to get Gmail, Google Plus, and Google Search without incurring data charges.
Fox has called for a preliminary injunction ahead of a copyright ruling on Dish Network's AutoHop. That's a service that allows viewers to automatically skip advertisements on recorded shows, and a judge has rejected it. Fox, Comcast, NBC, and CBS have all sued Dish Network, saying that show recordings are unauthorized. Fox says it would appeal this latest ruling, that AutoHop is destroying the fundamental underpinnings of the broadcast television ecosystem. Dish calls it a victory for common sense.
I thought some of the reality shows they had were destroying the underpinnings, but I may have been wrong about that. Twitter sent another round of emails resetting passwords for users they suspect, quote, may have been compromised by a website or service not associated with Twitter. British comedian David Mitchell got the email, but said the only thing he noticed weird was one deleted post. And sadly, TechCrunch's story on Twitter, make $250 a day from home, appears to be a result of the hack and not a legitimate way to rack up $91,250 a year. Twitter has said they sent more reset emails than they needed to, and so the problem was maybe not as widespread as some people thought.
MasterCard is rolling out a new credit card that has an LCD display and a keypad built into the card. It's a move for security, as it pretty much combines the card with an authentication token. Oh yeah, that display can show you like rewards points and all kinds of other data eventually. MasterCard says the card, which is called Display Card, looks and works like the old school cards you've used before. It'll be available in Singapore and Europe first.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. You want the new iPhone? Before you get the new one, make sure you sell the old one or whatever your old phone is. It doesn't actually matter what new gadget. You got the iPhone, the iPad, one of those Samsung tablets, the Nexuses that are coming out from Google. Get some cash with your old gadgets. Gazelle is simple and fast. Go to GAZELLE.com. Pick your gadget. Tell all the specs, what carrier it is, what storage capacity it has. They'll give you a quote, and that quote is good for 30 days. Lock it in now, because gadget's probably not going to get more valuable over time. And then you can take your time and get your new gadget and get it all set up and replace the old one. Then print out the shipping label. Gazelle pays for the shipping. Send the gadget back to Gazelle, and in a few days, you'll have cash either by PayPal or you'll have a check coming to you. Gazelle.com is the simplest way to turn your gadgets into cash for the new gadget. Find out what your iPhone is worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. GAZELLE.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Very excited to have with us today Dan Benjamin, founder of the 5x5 Network. Great shows over there with folks like Jason Snell, Gina Trapani, Andy Anako, a lot of familiar faces. Dan, welcome to Tech News Today. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on here. Great to, you know, this is the first time you and I are actually talking. Isn't that weird?
I know. We were talking about that before the show because I listened to your podcast, you listened to ours, and it feels like we've talked for a long time.
That's right.
But we've never actually done it in person, so this is awesome.
Yeah.
Let's start off talking about the new Champion smartphone, Sarah.
Yeah, so the headline says, iPhone, you're out. But when you look at it, you go, wait, no, they're talking about the iPhone 4S as opposed to the Galaxy S3. So this is a report by Strategy Analytics that in the third quarter of 2012, the Samsung Galaxy S3 handset outsold all others, including the iPhone 4S, as the world's best-selling smartphone. So this isn't shipping numbers. It's actually sales. So that comes out to 18 million units in Q3 compared to the iPhone 4S's 16.2 million units, which is 10%, almost 11% really, share of the global smartphone market going to Samsung. But then as soon as you go, well, wait a second, we're talking about iPhone 4S, we're talking about Q3, and that's the quarter where the iPhone 5 kept a lot of people from buying iPhone 4Ss.
There were so many rumors about that.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been strange if the iPhone 4S had really sold that well. So I feel like, well, this is a little bit silly. Sure, you can say Galaxy S3 is on top because iPhone 4S numbers were down a lot because people were waiting to see what was going to happen. And then the iPhone 5 actually came out right at the end there, but it didn't have enough time to create that many numbers. I say with almost 100% certainty that this will be reversed next quarter. It's a quarter because it's a down quarter for Apple.
And there was one of the stories that I read kind of posited that it would be sort of a 6-month cycle, that, you know, the Samsung phones have gotten popular enough that they can steal the crown during the off period for the iPhone.
Exactly.
And then Samsung continues to put out phones in the spring, then the iPhone's probably going to come back and steal it in the other quarters. You know, do we think that it will actually balance that way? It'll just go back and forth?
I don't think it's going to keep going back and forth. I mean, the Galaxy series and the S2 and 3, they've gotten better and better, and Samsung's done a really good job unifying that thing. Because in the U.S., it was named all kinds of different things on every different carrier. And for the 3, they finally got that one label. So I think if they're building a lot of momentum here, and assuming Apple finally figures out how to make that phone less stagnant, because that operating system is pretty old, that design is somewhat underwhelming to a lot of people at this point. It doesn't have that same like flashy appeal because Samsung is trying everything aggressively to try to win over people. And those ads, I think they're somewhat working because it's a larger screen. The fact that, what's that ad where your whole phone fits in my screen? Like it's this tiny device. I think Samsung eventually might be able to pull it away.
But those ads aren't they aren't keeping people from buying the iPhone 5. I started seeing these ads around the time the iPhone 5 was released.
Well, that was the next big thing is already here, right? That was their claim. That there's no reason to wait or even look stand in line. They already have a device. I just don't know if Apple is going to do anything shocking in a long time because their device has pretty much been, okay, it's the same form factor, slightly larger. OS is kind of the same. Samsung's just
trying
everything.
So what you're saying is unless Apple revamps the iOS look and feel quite a bit, we may not be talking about this again this year. It may not be a dip just because people are waiting for the iPhone 6 or the 5S or whatever they're going to call it.
No, I think this year probably iPhone will take it back. But I just think that over time, Samsung's probably going to pull this out.
Well, that's what I meant by saying this time next year.
Oh, next
year. Dan, what do you think? Is this sort of like a ping pong game or
well,
are we seeing the beginning of the end?
No, I mean, I think it's more of a ping pong thing. And I think it's worth mentioning that where Apple can excel and within Apple, I think you see hardware innovation and then you also see innovation on the software side. And, you know, carriers like in the case of Samsung, they're totally dependent on what Google comes out with. And yeah, they can, you know, put their own layer on top of it. But for the most part, it almost seems like Apple's focus. Yeah, they'll come out with a new, you know, updated hardware, and then they'll focus on the software, the iOS side. So I think depending on what comes with iOS 6, you know, this is Apple's chance to really do something because, yeah, the hardware, if you've used both the iPhone 5 and the 4S, you know the 5, it is a completely new device, even though it might not look externally like a new device. All you have to do is hand somebody one of them and they'll say, wow, this is so much lighter, the camera's so much faster. But those are intangible things. And when people are looking at, you know, at the Samsung, they say, man, this thing's got a, you know, such a huge screen on it. I want that. You know, that can bump the sales, especially when it is, as you mentioned, kind of a down quarter for Apple. But I think it is going to go back and forth. And I think that's the way that we see with innovation all the time, going back and forth. One competitor does something, another one says, well, now we've got this. So I don't know, but I think next quarter is going to be Apple's for sure.
We're sort of seeing this release cycle echo over in China, where the iPhone 5 has not actually started selling yet, although it's gained most of the clearance it needs to begin by the end of the year. Canalys, another research firm, says Apple wasn't even in the top 5 smartphone market in China for the third quarter. Saw local handset vendors make a lot more sales, low-priced smartphone models. As the iPhone was number 5 in Q2. So that was the quarter just previous to the one that we're talking about. Out of 5, iPhone was number 5, but it was number 2 in Q1. So it's like the further we get from that 4S, which was the newest model, again, just over a year ago, the more other phones start looking attractive. And of course, again, with low-priced smartphones that you don't really consider them.
A little bit apples and oranges there.
Yeah, there's a little bit of
not
that.
Not to make a pun.
You want to save money, you're just not going to go with Apple. See what you did there.
I didn't mean to. I really did.
But if you're curious as to who was number one, well, it was Samsung. Mm-hmm. Samsung was number one in the third quarter over in China. 14% share in shipments. Lenovo at number 2 with 13%. A company called Yulong Computer Telecommunication Scientific at number 3 sells smartphones under the brand name CoolPad.
That's the Chinese brand name, CoolPad?
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's kind of awesome.
Kind of love it. Number 4 and number 5 were ZTE and Huawei, respectively. So again, yeah, I think we see that this is a trend that happens all over the world.
On the worldwide stage, I'm trying to find if this is true or not, but is the Galaxy S3 available on the top mobile carrier in China? Because I don't believe the iPhone is. iPhone 5 is on the third largest carrier, and that kind of thing is keeping them out of the worldwide numbers because they're not even on the top carrier in China. A major market.
It'd be kind of like
out.
If the iPhone had premiered on Sprint in the U.S.
Right, it might not have been a gangbuster. I'm kind of curious. I mean, if you guys know, write in. But is the S3 on the top Chinese carrier?
Yes.
And that could definitely help the numbers.
Now, the iPhone 5 has been cleared for China Telecom and China Unicom, not yet China Mobile, which is the largest carrier of the three, the state-owned one in China. So, yeah, this might be a very different situation in China this time next year. Not so much for the U.S. market.
Well, that's all good news for Google, because as the Android operating system rises, that's good stuff for Google. They make their money on selling ads to folks who use Android phones. But there's some bad news for Google out there today. We mentioned that in the news fuse as well. Experian Hitwise showed Google's search share in the UK dropped below 90% for the first time in 5 years. Bing grew to 4.71%. Hitwise thinks that's probably a factor of the Windows 8 launch. People using Bing as a default search engine in an IE on the Windows RT Surface. Bing is the default search engine for all your browsing. And while you can change it, it's not real obvious how to do it. Google also down to fourth place in China at 4.72%. Now, it's not a big surprise because they don't actually have a Chinese search engine, but they do have a Hong Kong search engine that they try to get used by people in China. There was the whole firewall fight. But a newcomer there, Qihoo 360, has pushed into second place, kind of bumping Google back. Qihoo 360 has a 9.64% market share. Baidu leads all with a 72.97% market share. They're kind of the Google of China. But here's the thing. There's a controversy around Qihoo not respecting robots.txt. They may have gained that number two slot by copying search results. So the Chinese government actually requires all search players in China to sign a fair play agreement saying they will respect the robots.txt file, that they won't go and just scrape the search results. Remember, there was some talk about whether Bing might be doing that with Google a while back. Also, the loss of Google Maps on the iPhone dropped usage of Google Maps down in China to sixth place. The first place is actually AutoNavi, and Baidu is second place in maps in China. But beyond just the individual, like, oh, we can explain China, we can explain UK, it does seem like Google's search share used to be above 90% in the United States. It's somewhere in the 60s usually now. Has Google reached saturation, Dan? I mean, as a search engine, is it got nowhere to grow?
Well, I think it has. I mean, you can see this kind of thing. Look at what happened. Was it last week when I forget which version of Windows it was, didn't have Firefox listed as one of the browsers, and you saw their downloads went down to a trickle during that time period. Whenever you have a launch or something like this, people always take for granted that the default search engine is going to be Google, or they don't even care what the default search engine is in an operating system. You mentioned this with Windows. Somebody's going to go in and they're going to do a search. They just want results. So depending on what some of the bigger players, Microsoft in there certainly, decides to do as far as search engine, that's going to make a huge determination. But you know that the relationship with Google and China has always been kind of weird anyway. And I think, you know, with China being one of those markets that clearly Apple's very, very focused on and everybody really should be focused on, it's if Google can't win this one in the long term for them, they're not going to have the dominance that they've been holding for years now.
That's absolutely true. And then if you look at these UK numbers, ask.com rose market share, Yahoo rose market share. So it's not just Bing eating away at them.
Everybody for the longest time, you know, the search engine market, it was just Google's, and it was always going to be Google's. And you hear Microsoft's got Bing, big deal, but it is a big deal. And anything that takes away a percent, you know, Google's down 1.41% monthly change, right? That's huge. If you consider that how many people that actually represents using other search engines now, and they're getting it from all sides, Microsoft, Yahoo, Ask, and tons of others. And, you know, that who knows, this is not always going to be Google's game, it seems.
And the solution to that other companies have taken is find a new market where you haven't reached saturation. Well, China's that big market for them, and they've basically cut themselves out of that.
You look at Ask Rising, and you think, gosh, it almost seems personal, doesn't it? I hate Google so much, I'm going to use Ask.com instead.
I mean, Google's done a lot of things to tweak their search results that you see, like the knowledge graph on the right, and there's the page itself gets a little bit more cluttered. The navigation's been changing a bit. There's that black bar. Constant notification was going on Google+. I mean, it's gotten a lot more busy on the Google search side. And the fact that it can integrate your search results, it can actually look at your mail if you wanted to opt into that. So I wonder if there's a small, like, but vocal backlash that's going on with Google, because they've changed a lot in the past like year or two when it comes to what's on that search result page. So, you know, some of the things that they even integrated were on Bing first, like that left-hand bar that they got rid of was on Bing first. So I'm just kind of curious if there's enough advertising and enough negative press for Google and the change of the results that people are like, this isn't what I'm used to. I want to go back to the list of 10 blue links. I don't want to see this extra thing here and this extra thing there.
And the question is, how reliant is Google on the search engine? I don't think the search engine's going to fail when I say this, but if the search engine starts slowing down that fountain of cash that it's been generating for over a decade, how much does that impact? How much money are they making off of these other services, off of enterprise infiltration with apps, off of Android? It becomes an important question. Whereas right now they can kind of say we can play with a lot of stuff and self-driving cars because we've got this steady income. Although that's one of the things that Larry Page did when he took over as CEO was, let's stop playing around with so many things and let's start to focus. So they may be getting ahead of that already.
Well, if they want their market share back, they can just go buy Ask. They got enough money. we'll just take that 2% right now.
Drive over to Oakland with a suitcase full of money.
91%. There you go. Yeah.
But do you think that's realistic? You actually bring up a really good point, because I wonder, is that the kind of thing that Google would do? Wouldn't that in some way be admitting defeat in a way? It's be saying, well, we had to buy these guys because they were catching up with us.
Yeah, that is not the way Google expands and does things usually. It would be a huge change for them. You're right.
Yeah.
Speaking of making money off maps specifically, Waze is, you know, they've got a little wave of popularity right now. They were one of the recommended map apps for iOS when Tim Cook made his apology. So they're top of mind a little more, and they're trying to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever used Waze, you know, it uses free crowdsourced information to build this navigation app. It's on iOS. It does turn by turn. It does a lot of cool things that you normally have to pay money for. And if you're concerned about Apple Maps, you have another option here. The company's launching its own ad platform. So what's going to happen is when you put in your route, Waze is going to show you up to 3 ads per route, I think it is, as you're going. So so if you're driving by Starbucks on your route to work, you might see an ad for it. Like, hey.
Will this be like in the turn-by-turn? Like, instead of, you know, get ready to turn right in 300 feet, you'll hear, get ready to buy a latte in 300 feet.
I did not read if that would be the way the ads are implemented. As far as I could tell, they seem to be displayed on a map.
Okay.
They're not necessarily speaking to you. If that was going to happen, that would be an epically bad move.
Please,
I
hope no Waze employees are like, that's a great idea.
And as for targeted ads, Waze, you know, they could track where you're going to go individually, but what they're going to do actually is use general group data. So if a lot of people are taking the same route, they're going to suggest particular locations based on that. They've got a ton of launch partners. In the future, Waze wants to use data from Facebook likes as well, so you can have a better targeted ad. I'm just kind of curious. Dan, do you think that these kinds of ads are intrusive enough to take people away from Waze? I mean, it's a free crowdsourced application. Is this going to be like, well, I don't want to use this because now it's hitting me up for money?
You know, that's a really good question, and I think there's been a history of apps that have come out and they've said, well, if you want to turn off the ads, then you can pay for the app. And I didn't see anything about these guys actually offering anything like that. So from my standpoint, like being forced to use an app that's going to have ads and there's no way out of it, for me, that's not going to stop me from using it. But I think there's a lot of people out there who really, like, they resent that. Like, it was supposed to be free. It should stay free forever. Well, that's for not sure. Reality. I would love, this is an app that I use. And what I, you know, one of the things in this article that you guys have here is that they're saying they can understand where people are headed because you're setting your destination. It's not just saying, oh, you're on this road and there's a Shell station nearby. They're saying, we know where you're headed. Maybe you want some of this other stuff that's out there. So in a weird way, like maybe it will be useful for you. I don't really know yet. I'm not ready to judge it. But as long as if it's just a pinpoint on a map as I'm driving by and I see that, you know, the sandwich shop down the street has a coupon there, like, that might not be such a bad thing. That's not going to turn me off. But if it gets in the way of the turn-by-turn directions, yeah, forget about it.
Well, and that's always the key with advertising, right? Is it actually giving you value? Then you tend not to hate it as much.
If
it's like slapping you in the face with something you don't really want at the time, then that sucks. So it's all in the implementation.
But yeah, how are you going to see this unless you're walking? I mean, if you're driving, you can't see an ad unless it's an audible as in, you know, mm-hmm. you can hear it, not the company. And that's something that Pandora does, right? They insert audio ads because I'm not looking at the app when I'm listening to my music. And so I'm like, okay, this is an ad for Target.
You it's know, when you're looking at the route beforehand, because I use the Maps app that way a lot, which is like I plan the route and then I look at it to be like, okay, I'm going to go down that road. You'll see these pins, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll kind of call your attention to the fact of this stuff is along your route.
I would think like when you're at a stoplight or something, I usually glance down at the GPS to see my next turn or what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it looks like instead of having, you know, the text of Whole Foods, they have the logo of Whole Foods, which I'm going to recognize a lot faster than just somebody writing it out. So I think that would be the way you'd see it. So it might not even be that intrusive. You know, you're just looking down every now and then.
And honestly, that, just because I happen to go to Whole Foods pretty regularly, I would love. If I'm somewhere unfamiliar and I'm like, that's where I get my kombucha, love
that's
it. Thank
the
you,
key,
Waze.
Right? It has to be
listen,
something
listen
like
that. Listen to what they say. They say that 20% of the users already search and navigate to restaurants while on the app. 15% search for fast food establishments. 10% search for coffee shops. So if you think about that and know that people are going to be making stops along their route already. They say, oh, well, I'm going here. You know, why not show them something they might want along the way? That's kind of cool.
And especially if they're pulling if you get in from Facebook likes.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you've liked In-N-Out Burger, well, there aren't that many In-N-Out Burgers. And some people think it's a really big deal when they come to California so they can go. You're rolling your eyes, but you know I'm right.
I know that it
people
is a
make
big
a big deal,
deal
out of it.
I don't quite get it, but okay.
Well, whatever. Sorry. So you're going up 101. It's like, oh, cool, In-N-Out. Yeah, I'm close. So I can see where it says.
We noticed you've stopped at 3 coffee shops today. There are bathrooms located at the following Shell stations.
I wish you could work with the Reminders app or something as well. Like, hey, why not build in that? Oh, by the way, you should pick up your dry cleaning today. You're going by it. Like, this is the kind of stuff I would like.
Yeah.
And then get an ad for a different place.
We were talking about Pandora just now, Sarah, and the NPD study now says that the Pandora-like services have the edge
yes.
in the music streaming.
Yes, they do. So internet radio services, which is the category that Pandora would be put in, says NPD grew 27% from this period a year earlier. On-demand services are also up. Those are companies like Spotify or Rhapsody or even people who listen to music via YouTube. They grew 18%, but a little bit more slowly. And there's some other interesting stats of listening habits in the U.S. anyway. AM/FM radio is the number one favorite music listening choice still in the United States. Streaming services and web radio have replaced the compact disc for second place.
Aw, poor compact disc.
Finally, compact disc number 3. Since 2009, the percentage of Pandora users who also listen to AM/FM radio declined by 10%. Listening to digital music files on portable music players also dropped 21%. So you see a trend here. And 34% of Pandora's users are now listening to the service in their cars. About 2 CESs ago, I remember you go over to the car section and all anybody wants to talk about is the new Pandora integration. Obviously, that's working, right? I mean, people are in their cars. Yeah. They're no longer listening to AM/FM radio. Well, not as many folks.
That was their way of showing they were net savvy. It was like, we've got Pandora.
Yeah, you're in your car all the time, aren't you? You don't have to think about this on any other device, which is interesting because we're now in a period where Pandora is suing ASCAP to get lower licensing on music because Pandora's like, we got more and more people using Pandora. This is the time to strike. If you recall, they had an agreement with ASCAP between 2005 and 2010 that was basically making the payments that Pandora made a little bit more reasonable for a specific period of time in contrast to what satellite or terrestrial radio stations have to pay. Pandora says, we want a new agreement and we want it through 2015. We want a blanket licensing fee that will cover all songs represented by ASCAP, which is over 4,000 members. Pandora is also supporting passage of the Internet Radio Fairness Act, which would lower royalty rates that web radio services, not just Pandora, but all, would have to pay labels and artists music. Music industry says, hold on a second. All you're going to do is hurt the artists here because no matter what rate we choose, it's a 50-50 split. Artists get 50, labels get 50. Pandora, if you pay us less, artists get less. Pandora says, no, you're just giving us exorbitant fees, and you always have, and you're not treating us the same as the old guard. So, yeah, Pandora's on the offensive.
You know, it's interesting. I remember when SoundExchange came in and kind of put the hammer down on Pandora specifically, as well as all the other smaller, like Soma FM type stations. They really had them over a barrel because it was at the height of the legal power of the RIAA. And you know, the Jamie Thomas lawsuit was still new. And folks like Pandora were like, we're going to get sued out of existence if we don't agree to something, and we have to. At the same time, AM and FM had been able to get congressional support back in the 60s to broker a deal that said, we provide promotional value for you. We sell you records. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to pay all of these royalties. We're going to pay the writer's royalties, the BMI ASCAP, but we're not going to pay the performance ones. That was not an argument they could use at the time with Pandora, because everyone said, well, you don't help sell any records. All you do is help piracy. The debate has changed since then, and Pandora now is not the only service, and the music industry is making money off of digital now. So I think that's why it's a good time for Pandora to lead the charge and say, we're helping you. We can show that we're helping you. If you don't want us to go out of business and stop helping you, you need to alleviate some of this pressure.
And that's a good point that you make. We see the numbers of engagement going up, but Pandora's profits are not going
right
up. Pandora's stock is down since it went public last year. Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year, a little over a year ago. And Pandora is like, we've got this model. It should be sustainable. It's not, though. So two different sides of the story. Dan, what do you make of music streaming and internet radio services?
Well, when you look at this, 34% of Pandora's users, according to the notes here, are listening to the service in their cars. And that's what we got to think about here. It's all about the cars. It's not about what people do at home. It's not about what people do at work. It's about what people are doing in their cars. AM, FM, I mean, listen, I've been a fan of talk radio, obviously. I've been a fan of talk radio my whole life.
You and me both, brother.
And yeah, and I mean, I was the kid that in the back of class in high school, you know, I'd have one of those little tiny radios, and I'd have the headphone going up in my ear, and I'd sit like this in class. I'd be listening to talk radio while the class is going on. And so for me, the idea of like what I think of as terrestrial radio, AM, FM, talk radio, that kind of thing. We're not talking about talk. We're talking about music here. But the idea, I mean, AM, FM radio, these are dinosaurs. And these guys, just like the big music industry, these things are going away. So anybody who's, of course they're saying creators are, so all the poor creators are suffering. They've always been suffering. The people who make the music, they've always been suffering. You get a few people who've made $1 billion from Platinum Records, but that's not the regular story. These people have always been suffering. And if anything, I think digital is putting them in front of more listeners. I think it's doing more than AM, FM radio has ever done, or if it hasn't, it will be doing more than AM, FM radio. I mean, obviously, I'm a fan of digital, guys. Come on. But this is the thing. It's about the cars and who can get in front of the cars. Like my car has this Sirius XM radio thing built into it. If I had had a choice, I would have picked Pandora or Spotify or something instead of this. Forget about it. It's not even an option. I would much rather have that kind of entertainment where I feel like I have some say and influence over what I'm actually going to hear.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the big difference for me. Of course, Pandora or a company like Pandora is going to win this thing. Of course, they're going to win it. It's just a matter of how long does it take for them to get there.
Well,
and we're well on the way.
And it's key that you said a Pandora or a company like them, because if they don't get a break on these royalty rates, they are very much in risk of going out of business.
Oh, yeah.
But somebody else will come and fill their shoes, because I agree with you. Radio as a, like, these frequency modulated waves coming into your car is definitely going away. The radio stations that are going to survive are the ones who navigate the new waters into being carried over wireless internet waves into your car. And radio, it's, in a way, you look at it, it's going to explode. We already have so many more options of what we can listen to than we ever did before. So much more customizable. And really, the music industry has always looked at this as a chance to pounce on that deal that they had to agree to with AM/FM that took away some of those royalties, and this is a chance for them to get it back. This is a money grab, just like any other industry transition.
For sure.
All right. Google experimenting with free mobile access. Mentioned this in the news fuse as well. The Google Free Zone is actually similar to o.facebook.com. I think it's 0.facebook.com.
Oh, Facebook.
Zero for $0. This is a common thing. Now, in Africa, Facebook has been the king of this. You've got a feature phone that has some limited internet connectivity. Facebook says, look, carrier, provide 0.facebook.com for free, and people will start using the phones more, and they'll start paying you for other digital services. You can start selling them all kinds of other things, and it has worked so far. So Google's doing the same thing in the Philippines. You can either go to g.co/freezone or libre.ph, gets you to the same place. It's the Google Free Zone, where you can use Gmail and check your Gmail. Now, if you click out from your Gmail, you will have to pay data costs, but you can check all the Gmail for free. In fact, if you open attachments, which you probably should never do on your phone, but if you open attachments, you have to pay data costs for that too. You can go to Google Plus, which is sort of Google's like, hey, we're better than Facebook. Facebook just has the social network. We give you the social network and the mail and the search engine. But not sure how many Filipinos have Google Plus friends yet. The idea is that maybe that would boost that. And then there's the search engine. Now, this is the interesting one. You may think, well, why would you use the search engine if you're going to have to pay? You get one free click. Kind of brilliant on Google's part. So you can use the search engine, and any of the search results you can click on, and you'll get that page. Now, if you click on from that page, you incur the data costs. But,
and everyone's going to.
Oh, and you know, tons of these kids are going to be like, I surf the web for free because I search, I click, and I get to the page, and then I go right back to the search engine to find the next page. You know, they'll figure out how to game the system, but most people won't. Most people who are busy are just going to be like, oh yeah, I'll pay 10 cents.
That's the beauty of the internet, right? When did we all first start clicking on things on the internet? Oh, you click. And then you click on other things, and then you get lost, and it's beautiful. And where'd we even start? Who knows? Who cares?
Although I try to think on my old Nokia candy bar phone, like I can remember trying to pull up web pages. It was kind of a pain. I think the feature phones work a lot better than that did back then.
Well, the thing is, if people are going to work around the payments, that means Google's going to get that data every single time. It's not just that they're tracking you. It's like, well, you're going back to Google. It's harder to argue that, oh, I don't want Google to know what I'm doing. It's like, well, you're going to Google's site every single time. We're going to watch what you're doing. And the thing is, that, like I was saying with Google search results, they have so much data up front anyway. So to even have to click certain things, you might not even have to do that. So it to a lot of people, just like Facebook's become the internet to certain people, Google is going to be the way they interact with the internet. They're calling it the reaching out to the next billion. They want market share. There's a billion other people out there that haven't gotten access. And to have this really low, well, free internet access is just, it's a great like PR movement and altruism thing. But for Google as a company, it's just brilliant.
Dan, do you think that this helps solve that earlier problem about grabbing that market share in other places if they can get this sort of program rolled out all across Asia?
Yeah, and that's what you've got to ask yourself is how, you know, because we're not talking about typical smartphones. We're not even really talking about phone users in the way we think of them here. So I don't know. I mean, Google Free Zone has a certain appeal to it. I think it'll appeal to a lot of the folks over there. And, you know, it'll be one of those things that as soon as you realize, oh, I can send text messages. This is really cool. I can text all my friends. And then you realize that it's 10 cents a message. You say, well, wait a minute. Maybe I don't want to do that anymore. So whether or not this thing becomes what they hope it will or not, I mean, it's certainly going to be a nice little revenue generator for them. I mean, everybody's, like you said, everybody's going to click a second time. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's the first one's free. And believe me, I am.
One's always free, Tom.
I'm married into a Filipino family, and they do like Facebook.
Where are we going to go with this?
So,
first one's free.
And they got lots of family, big family, all on Facebook. So getting them to move over to Google Plus is going to be a gargantuan task, at least in our family.
I think you could say that for a lot of people.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting play to see if they can get a lot of traction or if people say, oh, I get the free Google, and they really just use the email and the search engine. That's kind of what I expect will happen.
Yeah.
Let's finish up with NBC Universal and American Express. What is this about?
Okay, so this is about Z-Box and the second screen experience. So Amex and NBC Universal has got a new partnership. It's going to let consumers purchase products inspired by NBC Universal programs. So not necessarily everything you're seeing. You're going to be able to do this via the Z-Box app. Now, back in September, Comcast took a stake in Z-Box. We covered that on TNT. And if you forgot what ZBox is, it's that second screen social television app. So when you're watching things, you have a program guide. You can go on Twitter and Facebook. But now you'll be able to get information about how they can purchase show-related items such as clothing and kitchenware. And it actually works with NBC Universal's Daily Candy website that sells products for those viewers. Amex card members get $35 back when they use an eligible card synced with Facebook or Twitter account. So they get data. They give you money. It's definitely a different move for ZBox, because before it's this whole social television thing, Comcast, now it's got its hands in it. Does this new feature make anyone want to use the app more or less? What do you think, Dan? Are you second screened out because of this?
I mean, the whole second screen thing, the concept here is really interesting, and it's all about impulse buys. And if you read this article, it's a good one where they basically talk about how impulse sale, like how TV is responsible today for driving impulse. Like, I'm the wrong person to ask. I almost never buy anything on impulse. Like, I see, you know, you walked out of the Fry's and they channel you through the little cattle thing where you're supposed to see all these little knickknacks and stuff you're supposed to buy.
Oh, and like all that, the candy and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I never buy any of that garbage. I don't know who does. Like, I don't know who does. And I guess people do. I mean, I guess people are buying this stuff because it works and they do it everywhere. But like, I've never seen something. Oh, I got to have that and gone out and buy it. Like, I put that down on my list of things to research and a month later, maybe buy it. So I don't know. Like, I'm always surprised by how effective this kind of thing seems to be. I think this could be really huge. But, you know, they say that, you know, viewer habits are changing. Well, of course, they're changing. But is this a direction people want to go? I mean, I think back. I'm always reminded of the IKEA-esque scene in Fight Club where they've got Ed Norton's character walking and it shows all the different little things that he's, you know, bought, and it shows what they are almost as if he's walking through a live catalog. That, to me, seems like the future stuff. Like, you're watching TV and you say, oh, that's the thing that I want to get right there. How do they capture that? How do they make that a reality? That, I think, once they figure out that's going to be nuts. And I think this is like the step in that direction.
NBC's been in front of this stuff for a long time. I mean, they have this NBC shopping channel on DirecTV. Right. I think it's on other channels. And like you, Dan, like, I've never even watched it. I certainly wouldn't go there and shop, but it's been around for a long time. So like the candy in the impulse lane, I guess it works, or it would have gone away a long time ago.
It must work. I mean, it's got to work. It doesn't work on me, but it, like, I've seen it work. Like, I've been even in the line at Target where they've got the little, you know, little candy and little car sitting right up there or whatever. And, you know, it's like, that makes sense because, like, you've got a kid standing there and he looks to his right and he sees the race car and, oh, I want this. Fine. It's a buck. Throw it in the cart. But I guess it still works on adults too.
So I guess this could work more than it would, than I think it would work for me. I'm very skeptical about second screen because I think there's a very limited number of things people want out of a second screen, and they can easily get them off the web or off of Twitter with existing apps. They don't want a second app. It's a sales job to try to get you to use that. Maybe this is a thing that makes a lot of people say, oh, but I do watch a show and I think, oh, where did she get that sweater? I'd love to buy that. And if there was an app that would allow me to do that, that would be great. I don't know how, if there's enough of that kind of behavior, if it happens often enough to get people in the habit of it.
I agree with you. It's very rare that I would watch a sitcom, let's say, and think, I would like to replicate that lamp in my own living room, because it's not real, right? It's like I'm watching something that doesn't actually exist. If you get into more of like reality show or something where it's supposed to be people just like me, would you like to be more like this person? Here's where you could buy those shoes, sort of thing. Yeah, that might come up once in a while. But again, this is all a little bit more of an escape thing. And the second screen, although we cover them all the time on iPad Day because we're always trying to figure out, is it going to work ever? It always turns into something that seems a little bit like a chore.
Well, I mean, you're saying when you're watching some Real Housewives show on Bravo.
I would never do that.
Let's say you were, right?
Hypothetically.
Let's say you're watching a Bravo show.
I am a cord cutter. I couldn't watch it if I tried.
Let's say you're watching a Bravo show somehow, and like somebody like threw a vase, and you wanted to know what that vase is. You could find that out with this. I mean, there are a lot of other apps that go.
I would never do that, though. Like, you would never
but
be
it's
like,
a real product.
You know, where could I buy that vase that was smashed
what about,
so
you
nicely?
You know, Ken from Chicago was right there with me, because when you were talking about it, I was thinking about Mad Men. Like, what if when you're watching Mad Men, and it's like, hey, you like this like Art Deco retro stuff? You could buy it. You could buy these clothes and buy these things. That might get people
because you want to pretend like you're in the era of Mad Men. I mean,
Yes.
Okay. So it's like a role-playing fantasy?
But just imagine you're watching your favorite show on TV, and maybe you know, the lead character's wearing a nice sport coat, and you think, I kind of like that. And you glance down at your iPad on your lap, and right there on the screen, it shows all of the things that are in that scene, and you can buy any of them just by tapping on it. That people would use the heck out of that thing.
I think until there's like a good augmented reality app, like that Fight Club style right. scene where you can hold up your device and go, I can see every product.
Right.
Until there's
right.
that, this might be the way to do it if you're going to do
exactly.
it. So if you want to buy Tom's sport coat, he'll
it's
let you
available
know.
At Nordstrom now, or was like 7 years ago when I bought it. Let's move on to the randomizer. You know, I was really resisting talking about this story, but everybody seems to love Jam with Chrome. It's an interactive web app, lets you play music with your friends over the internet. Everybody can jam and do a little jam session together. Am I alone in being dead inside and not being excited about this?
I haven't tried it with friends yet. I've just played with this, and I was trying to use it on it. I saw the drums. I'm like, this is cool. I'm going to try this with my tablet. It doesn't work on the Nexus 7. It doesn't work on the iPad. It doesn't work in Chrome on either one. I can't use the drums that way because I don't want to just tap on my screen unless I had a different device. So I haven't been able to play with it yet.
Jason's jamming out over there.
Yeah, I'm getting down. I'm grooving.
It just feels like an overgrown Google Doodle. There you go. Here's one.
Maybe that's why I hate it.
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either.
If you're not really musically inclined, how much fun is this really going to be for more than 5 minutes?
Maybe that's actually the real reason I'm resisting it, because this is just going to show how bad of a musician I am.
Yeah. Jason, was that live? Were you just doing that with the mouse?
Yeah, you can hold down your mouse. And
great.
Because there's a little tempo. It's actually pretty interesting how detailed they've gotten here, because it's pretty easy to use, but they've added a lot of kind of things that you get out of sequencers, like a metronome, a tempo, so that you can sync everything. And this is a little bit deeper than just hitting a couple of keys. I'm sure people are going to use this to create some interesting music, just to show off the fact that they were able to use it to create interesting music. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. And you can add friends in, right? And then
I haven't played around with that yet, but you can invite friends, and I assume that's where jamming comes into play.
Correct. There you go.
Well, I guess it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. It's
I guess.
From a programming standpoint.
Yes.
I admire it.
Let's all jam out once the show's over.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
All right.
All
test.
Of us.
Yeah.
Do it.
Jason's obviously playing all the instruments.
Don't worry. I'll give you guys full credit for those wailing solos.
let's move on to the calendar.
Tomorrow's a big day. The Acer Iconia W510 Windows 8 tablet is hitting the streets. Starting at $500. AT&T is launching the $99 Nokia Lumia 920 and the $49 Lumia 820 tomorrow as well. But that's not all. AT&T is also launching the Galaxy Note 2 for $299.99.
Is that all?
That's all for tomorrow. But on November 16th, AT&T is selling Samsung Express, the touchscreen hotspot. So it's two devices. It's the MiFi Liberate hotspot and then Samsung's Galaxy Express Android smartphone for under $100.
You know, this is starting to get silly. Why do I need a touchscreen hotspot? Just let my phone be a hotspot.
Well, what if it had apps on the hotspot?
And then you can make calls on it.
It's a second screen hotspot.
Oh, my God.
You can buy your phone again if you like it.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail, 260-TNT show, with a theory. Because Father Robert Ballester the other day brought up the question, like, what does Google get by putting maps back out for iOS? Here's one theory of what they would get.
Hey, what's going on, gang? I just wanted to weigh in on the advantages to Google having their map app in the iOS platform. I think one advantage is that it actually helps the overall map, the experience overall, because remember, they're using that information to generate their traffic reports. So that's an advantage. I mean, the more phones and devices that they have their apps on, the better the experience is overall. So just wanted to add that in. Love the show. Take care.
That's a great point. Google wants to gather data to make that traffic app work be more accurate. In fact, that leads us right to our email.
Yeah, Terrence from Ontario, Canada was saying that Google wants data to get from its 100-plus million users on iOS Their main business is selling targeted ads based on the info it gets from people using its services. People lose sight of this. He also says what's ironic is, which you seem to miss, why Apple's new maps really suck. Because unlike Google, they don't have a rich and diverse source of data from other services and partners to feed their new Apple Maps service like Google does.
It's all about having your data. They just want to, you're just a data fountain. You're a data
funnel.
Blood pack for their mosquito data using.
Sounds... But it's supposed to help you in the end.
Yes.
It's like a data leech then. So.
Yeah.
Okay, but it
but think about it. I mean, it does help you. And that is the thing that I miss about Google Maps on iOS is, you know, up until, for me, the first time this happened was like a week ago. I misspelled something. I was looking for something on the Apple Maps app. I misspelled it. Well, for the first time ever, and I can't spell, so I'm always doing this. I type in something and I misspelled it and actually found it. A week or two before that, it wouldn't find it. I have no results. This just, you know, I never had that problem with Google Maps. So you'd go to a new city, you're traveling. Someone says, oh, you should try the seafood restaurant. And you don't quite hear what they say the name of it is. So you type in what you think it sounded like and Google Maps would find it for you. That kind of return, that to me is the value and the thing that I miss the most about Apple's Maps app. But of course they want our data. They'll do anything to get our data. And the more we tell them about our area and we live in and what we like to do, the more value Google has as a company, because they can, exactly as you guys said, they can turn around and they can do something with that data. Maybe it's provide us with better matching for a restaurant name, but there's a lot of other things they can do too.
Yeah, and I remember when Google Maps was not good at this stuff. Back in 2005, you know, early on, they've gotten incredibly better over time. It takes a long time to deliver you the malaria of awesome. never mind. I should have abandoned that metaphor.
Etienne from Cape Town, South Africa, has another email for us. Says, heard you guys wondering why Skype in China is an issue and why Microsoft isn't using it there. The reason is that Skype uses a proprietary encryption method that the Chinese government can't open up and inspect. They therefore only allow things like chat and video conferencing that are compliant and use open protocols. So apps like video is allowed, but not Skype. This way, they can be Big Brother. They can Big Brother the conversation if they so desire.
Thanks, Etienne. Yeah. Great explanation. Good, concise. We have the smartest audience in the world. You guys are awesome.
Sure do.
And thanks, everybody, for submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Let us know what kinds of stuff you want us to talk about each and every day by submitting articles there, voting them up or down. Dan Benjamin, a pleasure to have you spending time and chatting with us today. Thanks so much. Tell folks all about what's going on at 5x5, what they can find there, when they can find it, all that good stuff.
Oh, thanks. Well, the pleasure being here. Anytime. Just give me a call, guys. But 5x5.tv is the place to go. We do a whole bunch of shows. We talk a lot about, we do some tech news stuff. We talk a lot about Apple. We talk about mobile. And we got some great hosts that I have a pleasure to record with. Come and check it out.
You've got a book club episode. That's one I like.
Oh, yeah, we've got that. I mean, you know, we try to mix things up over
there.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Once in a while. So,
check it out. Number 5, BY5.tv.
TV.
You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We will be back tomorrow. It's Friday, so Darren Kitchen will join us. We'll see you then.
Ba-dum. Whoa. Ooh. A little extra something.
Yeah. Huh?
Thanks,
yeah.
Google Jam.
Actually, Jason played that entire outro.